Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. I still live in the sticks where you wouldn't go. In a town of 1200 off an old dirt road. And a country boy is all I'll ever be.
Alright, I'm going to go ahead and do the intro and let's get ready to rock and roll.
Okay, and before you do, Epstein didn't kill himself and communism sucks. No Bernie 2020.
You can say that on the podcast if you want.
Nah, I better not.
Alright. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Mountain Man Dan Show. We're here again with Nick today. Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing alright. Living the dream, the usual.
Right on. It's, how's the weather?
Rainy and not very cold. Typical Tennessee winter weather.
Yeah, it's right around minus 20 right now, I think, up here in the frozen north.
Oh, good weather to go to the beach.
Yeah, it's been great. I've been outside shooting half the day, and I finally decided that's about it. You know, when you're kind of hard to have really nice, smooth trigger pulls when you can't feel any of your fingers.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot to be said for a light trigger pull on Alaskan gun, and also a lot that couldn't be said for a light trigger pull on Alaskan gun if you don't have good muzzle discipline.
Yeah, it's there's definitely pros and cons to both. I'm not a huge fan of wearing gloves when I'm shooting. I've known a few people to have mishaps because of that. So I usually shoot barehanded. So, yeah, you know, you go out and shoot 5 or 6 rounds, and you come in, and you load a few more, and you wait for your hands to warm up, and you go out and shoot 5 or 6 more. It's not too bad.
Well, you don't fits all your guns like everybody on I'm with Roscoe does?
Oh, no. I
I need no, a I usually, in my life.
I like that group, but they're a little strange over there.
Yeah, a lot of noir, which that's what it's all about, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It's not. I'm there for the guns. You know, there's some cool guns on that group, but I'm not really into the 50s. You know, cop scene and all that kind of stuff. But it's still a cool group.
I don't even know if you call it a 50s cop scene. It's more like a 1920s to 1940s detective scene.
Yeah, that's probably a little more. But you know, they still got some pretty cool guns over there. So I hang out there quite a bit.
You know, the older I get, though, the more I have gravitated away from what you would call the double action service revolvers, even though I still love Model 10s and all that, to very old design single actions and the Ruger single action series of guns. I don't know why. Yeah, those are the guns I like shooting the most.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the Model 10. That 1905 M&P should be here tomorrow.
That'd be nice.
Hopefully. Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I'm pretty excited about that one. So, Nick, I decided to add a new segment to our show here. What are you carrying today?
I am carrying the 51 Navy today because I did not have to go into town.
Perfect, and that's a good enough reason. That was going to be the next question. Why are you carrying what you're carrying? I am carrying a Ruger 1911 today, or lightweight Commander 45.
What, you're not carrying a 500 Nitro Express Magnum Research BFR?
No, I'm not, because, and I'll, the reasoning behind it being is every time I've gone outside today, I've had the Marlin 44 carbine in my hand. So most of what I'm doing is just laying around the house being lazy, and I'm pretty confident I can handle anything that comes into my house with a 45 ACP.
Right.
Being in where it's warm today, I'm not too worried about the 1911 freezing up on me. And I just cannot stop handling this gun with those new Stag grips I put on. I put those, if anybody needs a set of Stag grips, check out, you can find him on David Alsup on Facebook. Look him up, Clear Creek Custom Grips. He makes some amazing grips, and I finally broke down and bought a set for my 1911. I cannot get over how much I love them.
And he's a class act, too. I can't say enough how much of a good person he is. Like, even if you don't buy from him, he'll totally just talk guns with you. He's just a normal gun guy. He's salt of the earth. He's in my neck of the woods. He's over here in Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe he is, yeah. And he's just a real good all-around guy to talk and BS with. And he makes some absolutely fantastic grips.
Especially the 73 single actions. He makes some beautiful two and one piece stocks for those. I mean, gorgeous.
Did you see those ones he made for Ruger Old Army last year? Last week,
those were fabulous, especially for what he charges. And if you go on and check his stuff out, you'll notice it's very reasonably priced for what you get. You would pay three to four times more than that from a lot of other people. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I bought the Elk Stags for my 1911, and I think they ran right around, I think I gave them $170 shipped for them, and they'd be $250-$300 anywhere else.
Oh, absolutely.
Except you can find them on eBay in that price range, but on eBay, you know, it's questionable quality. You never know. Sometimes you get pretty good stuff off there, and other times it's
Yeah, little Timmy in Bangladesh may have sewed his hands together building you that set of grips. You know, you never know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I'm really impressed with this set of stags. I've wanted a set of stags for this gun ever since I got it. Like I bought, as I was signing the paperwork, I was like, you know what, would be really good on this gun, a set of stags. And then it was just hunting down the right set, and finally I found Dave. And yeah, I regret not ordering some from him a little sooner because they are fantastic.
Yeah, a set of stags on a 1911 are as American as Flapjack, Chevrolet, and Elvis. I mean, that's just.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better than that.
When you're talking war, that's like, you know, that's always how you could tell the difference between a cop's 1911 and an outdoorsman 1911. You know.
You know, it's funny because when I bought this particular 1911, I think I've had this one about 2 years now. I was just finishing up. I discovered Longmire on Netflix and was finishing it up. And if you've watched that show, he carries an actual original Colt with stag grips on it. And it really kind of,
not to go off on a rabbit trail. You mentioned Longmire, you know, the reason I'm a 1911 Commander nut is all because of a movie as well.
Really?
Extreme Prejudice. You remember that? Uh-huh, movie?
I have not.
You have to. I know it's an old movie, but it's a good movie. It's Nick Nolte is the main character in it. And he single-handedly kills a whole cartel with full auto machine guns with one Colt Commander. And that's why from then on I was like, oh, that must be a really good gun.
Yeah, you've mentioned that gun a couple times, or that movie to me a couple times, and I haven't had the opportunity to watch it yet, but I do need to look it up.
I'll buy it on Amazon and send it to you.
All right. So let's go ahead and get into our main subject today. On the last episode, we talked about our ultimate brush gun challenge. And much to my surprise, we actually had three entries from listeners.
Cool stuff, too.
So, yeah. Very so we're going to go with,
like, I figured everybody's going to show up at Marlin 336s, but there was actually some different, unique, original stuff. I was impressed.
Yeah, we got some pretty interesting things here to talk about. So we got that to talk about. And we'll talk about my build a little bit. Unfortunately, I forgot to write down the prices of each of the items I put on this rifle. So I'll have to just pull the numbers off the top of my head, and you'll have to forgive me. But I'm still right around that $1,000 budget we talked about. So,
we'll do a second show this week. It's only Sunday.
Yeah, we'll probably – I'm not sure. I got a couple extra days off of work. So as soon as that Model 10 comes in, I plan that – it's not a Model 10, the pre-Model 10, that M&P comes in. I would like to do an episode on that. So we'll probably do another episode later on in the week before I head back to work.
Right on.
So do we want to talk about listeners' ideas first, or do we want to talk about my build first?
It's up to you.
Let's go with the listener. Let's go with the listener ideas first. So the first one came in from Rick, and Rick, believe it or not, is actually my neighbor. He lives across the street. He's an old veteran, really big, you know, good gun guy. A little rough around the edges. I don't think he listens to the show, but he saw the post on Facebook and threw in an entry. So Rick showed us what he actually put a picture on there, and I'll try to see if I can find the picture and put it up on the page on the Facebook page. Rick showed us his 1952 Remington 520, or I'm sorry, Remington 721. And 300 H&H Magnum.
Now that's very cool. Cool cartridge too. To me, that's like the 300 Win Mag of Europe. It's actually a really good cartridge.
Yeah, you know, and it's actually a classic Alaskan cartridge. Back in the day, if you read any of there's a couple like there's a book about a fellow named Frank Glasser that was during the 1920s, 30s up here in Alaska. Big, he was called the Alaska Wolfman. That's what he shot. He shot a lot of game of 300 H&H. It's actually, believe it or not, a very classic cartridge up here in Alaska. You still see a lot of guns for it up here.
You know, and it's kind of the cartridge that prevailed because there were two of those kind of cartridges that were hot in Africa for a long time. You had the 318 Wesley Richards, and then you had the 300 H&H. The 318 Wesley Richards is about obsolete. That's a hand loader's delight if you can even find a rifle chamber in it or someone to chamber a rifle in it. But the 300 H&H, I mean, that's still here locally. We have a gunsmith that just built one for himself, and he hunts whitetail with it. It's a super versatile cartridge. Lots of bullets.
Yeah.
You can do a lot with it.
Yeah, I know. And if you look at Rick's picture, he still, I think it looks like it's got a 22-inch barrel on his Remington, you know, and really a good bolt, you know, a good bolt action rifle like that. And the kind of brush hunting it opens you up. He has iron sights on that one, and it opens you up, you know, in the thick brush. It's still got plenty of horsepower to handle anything you might need to handle. But if you get a little longer shot, if you get up on a tundra or something, it still opens you up for a longer shot if you need to take one.
Well, with a 300 H&H loaded properly, it's not too far behind off-the-shelf 338 Winchester Magnum, really.
Ballistic. No, it's not.
Not too far behind at all.
And here's the thing about, you know, about Alaska is there's so much vastness up here, and we get so much different kind of hunting. Like right here where I am, everything's thick. You know, like I'm looking out the window of my house right now. This is the first episode we recorded in my new house, by the way. But I'm looking out the house at this black spruce, you know, and it is as thick as anything you guys have down there, you know, willow brush. And it's, you know, you want a nice short hard hitting rifle to get through that kind of stuff. Then you can get up on the tundra, you know, 70 miles from here up around Summit Lake, and you'll get, you know, 1,000-yard shots at a caribou, because that's as close as you're gonna get. You know, it can change vastly in a short distance. So that 300 H&H is actually a pretty cool option. And I've actually seen and handled that rifle. It's a pretty nice old rifle.
Now, I have an entry, but the guy is not on Facebook. He doesn't use social media. He doesn't use a computer. He's an old guy. He's a close friend of mine who will stay anonymous. But he has a very interesting brush gun that I think you would be interested to hear about. His brush gun
is
a Thompson Encore blued receiver like the one I built my 270 on. And it's got wood furniture on it. It has a custom barrel. I can't remember who built the barrel. I don't think it was SSK. It might be. But it is a 15-inch blued barrel with Iron Express sights on it, and it's chambered in 50-90 sharps.
That definitely
That's
does
cool.
make my
– That is cool, if nothing else. Because I asked him, why didn't you do a 50 Alaskan? And he's like, I just really like a 50-90 sharps. I can't argue with that. And a handgun, I'm sure loaded properly, it's probably up there with a 500 Smith & Wesson, honestly, with the heavy bullet weights you're using.
Oh, it's you can shoot 600-grain bullets out of that thing, no problem. Any mention, I'm not going to lie, any mention of the 50-90 does make my nether regions tingle a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Who doesn't like it? If you don't like it, I think you're a communist.
So this is going to be a little bit off track, but I'll tell you a story. When I had to have been about 9, my dad and I, we bounced around back and forth between Alaska and Montana quite a bit when I was a kid. So at this point we were in Montana on the eastern side, living in a little town called Fairview. And my dad has always been a big sharps guy. He's always got a handful of single shot black powder rifles. When I was a kid, we used to shoot competitively black powder long range, you know, stuff. So I remember this one year, I think I was 9 years old, deer season, and he was hunting deer with a 50-90 sharps on an actual 74 sharps rifle. And we were back up there in the Badlands in Montana, North Dakota border area. And I remember him getting a really nice, I think it was like a 5x5 mule deer. And it ran up the hill about 200 yards away and stopped behind about a 12-inch juniper tree. His head was sticking out one side and his butt sticking out the other, and you couldn't really get a good shot. And he just wouldn't move. You know, we sat there and watched him for 20, 30 minutes, and he just was sitting there looking at us. And finally my dad said, screw it, and he touched one off right through the center of that juniper tree with that 50-90. And, there was still no question that there was enough power that still went clean through that. Clean through that deer after going through a 12-inch juniper tree.
Nice.
So, yeah, there's definitely a soft spot for any of those old black powder cartridges like that. I've actually got a 16-inch a Super 16 contender barrel in 45-70 that I'll take out here in the brush every now and then. It's got it is unfortunately it does have a muzzle brake on it, which makes it a little but tames the recoil quite a bit. That's a you know I forget what that rifle weighs, but it's not very much. I've got all synthetic hardware on mine.
Right.
So yeah, that's definitely a cool one. That brings back some memories.
I
for sure.
I like would get 90. Into them. I mean, if you want a 50 caliber rifle, something huge that's not that punishing on recoil comparatively to other cartridges of that size, and you want real nostalgic America, a 50-90, it's hard. You really can't go wrong with it, especially if you handle it.
Yeah.
You really can't go wrong with it.
No, it's a good one. I like the 45-90 as well. I've had a couple 45-90s, and they're a lot of fun too.
110, you know, all those are substantial.
Yeah, my favorite movie. You know, since we're talking about movies on this show, my favorite movie to date is Quigley Down Under.
Well, of course.
And yeah, one of these days I'm going to have that rifle. I'm going to have one built the exact same way. You know, as tall as I am, they built that rifle special for Tom Selleck with the extra barrel length and a. Like 14 and a half inch length of pull. So I'm going to have that exact rifle replicated for myself one of these days just because I want it.
A local shop here has a Pedricelli Quigley.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go ahead and have mine done on an actual Shiloh Sharps, you know, out of Montana.
That's what I would do. Yeah, that's the way to go. The Pedricellis are really nice, but if you're going to dump money and you want something specific, you will thank yourself later for having something like that built. You only cry once with quality.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is with the Pedersoli, I've looked at them, and they're nice rifles, but they still use a standard-length buttstock on their Quigley build. Right. And, like, the whole point of me having that rifle replicated would be to get the extra length of pull. But I have, like, a 15.5-inch length of pull. You know, it's one of the problems of being tall.
So I'm assuming you're not an AK guy.
Oh, I am not. I'm not a communist, for one. And for two, I just I'm not an AK fan. But yeah,
here
no.
Come to my bomb threats.
Yeah. All right. So let's get back onto our main subject here. Another friend of mine, Robert. Gave us his idea of the ultimate brush gun. He said he wanted to get a Rossi Ranch Hand 45 Colt, which is a for those who don't know what that is. I think another nickname for that would be the Mary's Leg. It's like a 12 or a 14 inch lever action, and they call it a pistol. It's got a little tiny short buttstock on it.
It's pretty much an R92 that they cut down.
Yeah, exactly. So he wants to get a Rossi Ranch Hand.
A 92 Winchester.
Right. So he wants to get the Rossi Ranch Hand 45 Colt with, and then he wants to get a SBR stamp, which is, I think, the short barrel rifle tax stamps around $200. So you'd have plenty of room in that budget because those Rossi Ranch Hands can be had for around, I think you can actually find them for less than $500 if you keep your eyes open.
I was just looking and the Academy over near me has them for $419. So out the door, after tax background, you're looking, and say even a box of ammunition, you're looking at what, $480, $485?
Yeah. So, Let's say 420, but if you mail order, you don't always have to pay taxes and that kind of stuff. Up here, I wouldn't have to pay taxes if I could find one. So that actually, even with his tax stamp, at 419 plus the $200 tax stamp, the SBR, he'd still be less than I paid for my brush gun. I mean, he'd probably be another $50 to buy actual buttstock for it.
Yep, and if he spent another $120 and had that chamber room to 454, then he'd really be cooking with gas.
Yeah, you know, and interestingly enough, Rossi did make that rifle in 454 for
Didn't
a while.
Did they make it in 480 Ruger too?
They did, and there was a mod.
Right?
Yeah, they Jeff Quinn has one in 480. He's quite fond of. And there was actually one here at the last gun show, but they wanted like $900 for it. And I'm not paying that for one.
Man, I remember locally here the Puma 454s and 480s for like $530.
Yeah, and that was the reason they quit making it in 480 and 454 is because they were having to do some extra work with the magazine tube to keep the magazine tube from shooting off under that much recoil, Which is a problem with lever guns. Like any of the 50 Alaskan builds, they always end up having to screw with magazine tubes and resupport them quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And they just cost so much. They were costing so much more to build than the standard ones, and they didn't like the extra price, so they dropped it. But anyway, yeah, so the Rossi Ranch hand 45 Colt SBR stamp with a stock. So we're sitting at, let's say, $500 for the pistol, all said and done. Now we're at $700 with the tax stamp, $750 with the with a stock. You can probably find a stock on eBay a little bit cheaper if you looked around. And then he would want to put a set of Skinner sights on it because of the that's to do something different with the cheap, crappy bucktail or buckhorn rear sights on them.
Be even greater to do something with the damn safety. If Rossi's listening, take that damn safety off of that rifle. For the love of God.
You know, it's funny because we talk about having that safety, but if I would have used the safety on my 454, I wouldn't have shot myself.
I get it. It's just, you know, growing up around Winchester 92s, like everybody in my family had Winchester. None of us had 30-30s. They were always 32 specials. But
so
it was common practice to carry them with one in the pipe, the hammer at half cock. That was just the way I was taught. You carried a lever gun. That was the way.
Yeah. Let me look this up real quick. I think it's Skinner sights, but I'm not 100%.
Oh yeah, one sure. That kind of eliminates the safety. It uses the hole for a post for the rear sight.
Yeah. Let's see here. I guess it's not Skinner's choice. It's Steve's guns. Anyway, yeah. So they make a little threadable rear peep sight that goes into where that safety goes, and I believe it does not disable the safety. I believe it still works to where you can turn the sight sideways, and it still enables the safety, and then you can flip the sight to see through and use it to turn the safety off.
Interesting.
Which, you know, it'd definitely be a real quick reference. You know, if you pop the gun up with the other ones, it was kind of hard sometimes when you're looking at the sights and not the back of the bolt to see if the safety was on. But that would be an instant, okay, that safety's on because you can't see through the frickin' sight.
Yeah, that makes a little more sense.
You know, that, yeah, no, safety's never really bothered me. I never used it. In hindsight, I wish I would have.
Yeah.
It would have saved me a lot of heartache. But it was a learning experience, and it was a long time ago, and we've moved on from that. But so I'm not saying that safety is a bad thing. But it definitely it is a little bit awkward to look at when you're used to the traditional lines of a 92. You know, very smooth, very sleek.
Yeah, so, I mean, I actually prefer the 92 over the Marlin for that. Not that the Marlin's not a good gun; it's just the Winchester 92 is that nice, compact, narrow, slick, sexy American lever action. Yeah, I'm here now. Yeah.
You there? Okay. We'll have to see if we can cut that part of the recording out and start over.
That was annoying.
That was annoying. You know what I think happened is my phone screen has to stay on in order for this thing to work. And when I was looking at that site, I went to the Internet Explorer to look at that site, and then my phone timed out. So anyway, we're just gonna go ahead and carry on. If I can edit that out, I will. If I can't, we'll try to just.
I think you can edit it out.
I think I can. So anyway, we got one more entry here from the Facebook page, and Ian says he would do an AR pattern 450 Bushmaster and a 10.5-inch pistol with a red dot.
That's interesting.
It is. I'm not a huge AR guy, but they definitely have their purpose up here. I haven't tested the ARs in the cold a whole lot. I know that guns that like to be oily normally don't work very well up here, but there have been some synthetic lubricants that come out in the last couple of years that are supposed to work a little better, and I haven't gotten a chance to really test them yet. But I can see a 450 Bushmaster pistol with a brace on it, you know, which technically the ATF says you can shoulder right now. They might change their mind next week, but that could definitely be an interesting, you know, on a 10 or 15 round magazine. That could definitely be a lot of firepower.
Oh, definitely. A small package. Or even a 458 hammer if you wanted to spend the bucks.
Yeah, or a 450 458 Stokum or any one of those other ones. There's definitely some potential there. I was actually looking when I was doing the shopping for my brush gun rig. I actually looked fairly hard at the Ruger American bolt action and 450 Bushmaster, and I very likely would have gotten one if they offered right. that in left hand. Because you can work a bolt action pretty quick in a hairy situation, and the 450 Bushmaster out of carbine would that actually offers quite a bit. You know, if they put a fast enough twist in there to shoot heavy bullets, which we'll talk about that a little bit more later on. But yeah, definitely. I think an AR, a 10-inch AR pistol with a brace, so you can still kind of halfway shoulder it in really thick brush. I could absolutely. Definitely see that. It's definitely a good choice. So I think it's time for the reveal of what I got. I posted some pictures up on Facebook and on the page, but for those who just listened to the show, I settled on a Marlin Model 94 in nice. 44 Magnum. And there's a couple of reasons I went with the Marlin. Number one is I've always liked the Marlins, and I wanted to get another one. I think they're a little bit better built than the Rossies. Not that there's anything wrong with the Rossies. I've had five of them in different calibers now, and they've all been good guns. But I just like the Marlins right. a little bit better. So I got the Marlin 94 44 Magnum. The reason I went with a 44 Mag is because I carry a 44 Magnum pistol all the time. So it made sense to me to have a carbine that I could also use the same ammo as my handgun. I only have to carry one kind of ammo that way. For general purpose brush gun, you know, at brush gun ranges, you know, inside of 50 yards, I wouldn't hesitate to shoot a bear or a moose with a 44 Magnum if I could get a good shot. So that, and then I went ahead and I upgraded the sights. I put a Skinner Express rear sight on it and one of their Bear Buster front sights. The rifle ran me $670. I went ahead and just bought a brand new one at the local store. They're probably a little cheaper in the lower 48. So $670 for the rifle. The rear sight from Skinner, I think, was $90. And the front sight, I put their Bear Buster front sight on, I think it was about $30 or $35. So I'm up to, you know, $800 right in there somewhere. Total price on it. Did I lose you again, Nick? Hello. Well, apparently we lost Nick again, but we'll go ahead and finish talking about my rifle. I also ordered, they haven't shown up yet, so they aren't in the pictures, but I did order a cartridge cuff for the buttstock from Rob at Simply Rugged. And I think that was about $80 or $90 sticker price on that. And then also got an Alaskan sling from him, which I think are $30 or $40. So I'm in that. I'm getting pretty close to that $1,000 budget by the time it's all said and done. I think I haven't added it all up, but it's around $950 or something total cost invested into this rifle. I'm gonna go ahead and close out here and start a new segment and see if we can get Nick back. Give us just a second. Technical issues. All right, try this again.
So you want to start over completely, or do you want to try to edit that one and link it with this one? Or can you?
Nope, we're just going to link them together and keep right on going.
All right, works for me.
Yeah, I'm not losing 30 minutes worth of recording because of some technical difficulty. So we'll just keep right on going.
You can edit out that one thing in the middle and then towards the end and link it up with all this, and it'll be fine.
Yeah, I'll try to edit it out, but if I can't, if not, it just has to be, you know, we're still working on the show and trying to get equipment. I was hoping by now that we would have a computer set up where we could do this, you know, properly, but we're having exceedingly hard time getting internet out here in the middle of nowhere, harder than I thought it would be, actually.
You have a good excuse there. You're in the middle of Alaska.
You know, it's funny because there's like three or four places that offer internet here. And we're only 5 miles from town. We're not that far out of town. And the one guy just never, like, oh yeah, we can hook you up. And then we never hear back from him. And then the other guy doesn't work if it's below zero, because For some reason, that makes sense in Alaska in the winter times. And then the third place, even though we're only 5 miles out of town, says they don't cover our area, even though our neighbor across the street has it. So who knows?
Huh.
So anyway, it is what it is. What was the last part that you heard? Where did I lose you at?
You were talking about your Marlin.
Okay, so I went ahead and on that last segment, I finished up talking about the parts I upgraded. I put the Skinner sights on it, and I put that I ordered a butt cuff and a sling for it from Simply Rugged. They're a little bit expensive. It definitely raised my budget, got us a lot closer to that $1,000 mark, but I'm still under the $1,000 mark, and it's just something I really really wanted on the rifle. Plus, being friends with Rob, I like to support his business, and I just like butt cuffs on lever guns.
I have several of Rob's holsters. His stuff's really nice. Sourdough pancakes are pretty much my like go-to for everything if I can get one for it.
Since I'm carrying my 1911 today, I actually am currently wearing one of Rob's holsters. I've got one of his DEFCON 3s, which it's still a pancake style, but it's got a steel band in the top to help keep it from closing up, you know, so it's a little bit better. It's a little bit better all around everyday holster. But anyway, let's get back on topic of the Marlin. So I bought the Marlin, and I was a little bit disappointed with it because of the, I thought Marlin had fixed this and I was mistaken. They're still using a 138 inch twist on their Marlin 44 carbines on the 94 platform, and it will not stabilize a 300 grain bullet, which is what I pretty much shoot exclusively out of my 44 mag pistols.
Right.
So unfortunately, that kind of voids the point of carrying the same ammo for my rifle and pistol, unless, and what I'm doing now is I'm working up some loads with the standard 240 grain bullets, and I'll just have to live with that for a while. Maybe in a year or two, I'll put a new barrel on this rifle. I'd really like to put a 20 inch octagon barrel on it if I get the money, you know, it'd be a few hundred bucks, but I think it'd be worth it in the long run, an investment to put the 20 inch octagon with a 120 inch twist. And normal places, a 44 Magnum with a 240 grain out of a carbine is plenty potent. And it's still a very potent round out of carbine. But I like the little bit extra bullet weight of the 300 grain bullet. Plus, in the pistols, I believe that the recoil is a little bit more user-friendly, I guess, might be. It's just a little more gentle, not quite as snappy with the heavy bullets.
I agree with that. I took a class couple years back, all weekend class, and I at the time was carrying a 4-inch 629, and like a dumbass, I ordered 1500 rounds of 180 grain jacket at hollow points, and I shot all those in one weekend, and I'd been shooting 240s, and yeah, the 180s, they're a little snappier than the 240s.
Well, when I was shooting competitive, when I was shooting USPSA quite a bit, most of the good shooters that you see that know what they're doing, they all shoot heavy for weight or heavy for caliber bullets. You know, they shoot 147s out of 9mm. They shoot, you know, 200 grain bullets out of a 40 Smith & Wesson, whatever else. And it's just, it does, you know, you can make the same power factor, which is, you know, in a USPSA power factor is bullet weight times velocity divided by 1,000, and you come up with your power factor. A heavy bullet will make the same, you know, if you need to make a 165 power factor to make a major, the heavy bullet will do it with a, I'm not going to say lower felt recoil, but a gentler. It's not quite as snappy. It's not just, in my opinion, it's a little bit more manageable. And the same thing crosses over into the big bore revolvers. I think they're a little bit more manageable with a heavy for weight or heavy for caliber bullet.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So that was a little bit of a disappointment. The rifle with standard 240 grain bullets shoots fantastic. I have shot some groups with 3, 4, 5 rounds touching at 50 yards, just resting over the hood of my pickup with, you know, 240 grain. Like right now I'm working up some loads with some 240 grain Hornady XTPs because that's what I have on hand. And they've been sitting on my shelf for quite a while because I don't shoot light bullets in 44 Magnum. So Now I'm working on working up some bullets or some loads that'll work in both my rifle and at my pistol likes as well. You know, currently I'm using that Model 29 Smith that I've become quite fond of. So I'm working up some loads that the Marlin likes as well as the Smith. And, you know, it's not the end of the world, but it is a little bit of a disappointment. For anybody thinking about getting a 44 Magnum carbine, Rossi is actually the only one that uses a faster twist that I'm aware of, except for maybe in a lever action. I think Ruger uses a 120 in their bolt action 44 mag, but in the lever action, both Marlin and Henry both use a 138 twist, and Rossi uses a 130.
Speaking of Rossi, while we're on that subject, I am really looking hard at buying the R92 full length or the R92C, which is the carbine.
Yeah, 20 inch.
But the normal length is still 20 inch. It's not huge, and it holds 10 rounds as opposed to 8 plus 1 with the carbine. But I'm really looking at them in stainless steel and 45 Colt. I don't know why. They're ultra cool. Maybe a blue one, but I want one in 45 Colt.
Yeah, and where you live, a 45 Colt out of a carbine is more than any what the Rossi. You know, if you start hand loading, they'll handle any of the loads the Ruger revolvers will. That's actually pretty cool. You know, I got my Marlin in a blued version. For two reasons. For one, they couldn't for the life of me. You would think they'd keep stainless guns here in Alaska, but every place I went only had blued in stock. And second thing, since all my revolvers are blued, I just thought the blued and walnut would just fit in with my revolvers a little bit nicer. Right. So I did get a blued version. I probably would have got a stainless if I could have found one for in my price range. But I went to half a dozen different stores in Fairbanks and nobody had a stainless one.
That's so nice.
Yeah, so that's, you know, it is what it is. I'm really happy with the blue one. The wood and the metal on this rifle are fantastic. I got one with a really nice chunk of wood on it. I'm sure you've seen the picture. It's a good looking rifle. Yeah, overall, I am 95% happy with the rifle. It looks good. It shoots good. It is smooth. A couple years ago, Marlin reworked the feeding mechanisms on these rifles.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is smooth. It will feed empty cases like butter.
Yeah, and you showed a video of that the other day.
Yep, and that was not always the case with the older ones. I've had some of the older ones, and they wouldn't feed 38 specials very nicely. They wouldn't feed wide flat nose bullets very nicely. They'd feed standard 240 grain, you know, tapered bullets fine, but they didn't like anything really out of the norm. Well, this one will feed anything. It'll feed cartridges that are the maximum length you can get up onto the lifter all the way down. Like I said, it'll feed empty cases like butter. There is no I've only had one feeding issue with it. I've probably put 400 rounds through it by now, you know, in the last week, testing different things and finding out what it likes and what it doesn't. I've had one feeding issue, and it was 100% my fault because I had the gun tipped sideways so I could eject the empty right into my hand.
Oh,
but I went to go close the bolt with the rifle still tipped sideways, and the new cartridge started to fall out of the ejection port. If you hold the rifle upright, it's smooth and feeds all day long just the way it's supposed to. So that's not really a feeding issue. That was 100% me not being too lazy to tip the gun back up before I started to close the bolt.
So, yeah, that'll happen with them, with the Marlins. That will happen.
Yeah, I know. I'm really happy with the rifle. Let's talk about the Skinner sights just a little bit as well. This was an experiment for me. I've always had peep sights on lever guns as long as I can remember. I've put peep sights on lever guns, but I've always used a like a Lyman or a Redfield or a Weaver style receiver sight that mounts on the side of the receiver.
Right.
This new Marlin 94. And I wasn't aware of this. I actually ordered the Skinner sights before I bought the rifle, knowing I was going to get the rifle. I wanted to try a pair of the Skinner sights out. And I wasn't aware Marlin no longer puts they no longer drill and tap the holes on the side of the receiver for the receiver sight. There's only the four holes on top where the scope base would go.
Wonder why they did that.
I think it's probably because people are using top mounted sights more. You know, more and more people are putting scopes on lever guns now and red dots on lever guns, and people are using the sights like the Skinner sights. Marlin offers quite a few different rifles with top mounted sights. I just think that the receiver sights are a little bit more bulky, and it's just kind of becoming a thing of the past on newer guns.
Wonder if I get one of those Rossies. I don't know. I guess I'll probably put Skinners on it because, I mean, there's really not much else in the way of options for something like that.
Yeah, there's a few different options for the Rossies, but anyway, so the thing with the Skinner sights, I wasn't 100% sure about them because the way that they adjust is that they've got a dovetail in the back, and that's your windage. You can unlock the little set screw and adjust it side to side for windage and then lock the little set screw back down.
Right.
And I wasn't sure about what I wasn't sure about was the elevation adjustment because it's a threaded stud, and you thread it in or out depending which way you need to go move the sight up or down. And I was worried that the sight adjustment increments might be a little bit too coarse. But I don't know if you've ever gone to file, like if you got a gun with fixed sights and you go to file the front sight off a little bit to change. No, it doesn't take. You can go a couple, two, three, four strokes too much of the file, and you're shooting 4 inches too high. It does not take very much adjustment on iron sights.
No, not at all.
I was worried about the sight adjustments being a little bit too coarse. But something I didn't consider until I actually had the sight in my hand is you can make half turn adjustments on that sight, and then you just take the peep part out and put it back into the other side of the sight. You can make half turn adjustments on it. They don't have to be full turns. So the range of adjustment on those sights is actually pretty forgiving. I really like the sight. I like it more than I thought I would. It fits and it looks really nice on the rifle. And I would definitely recommend. I would get another one for another lever action if I ended up getting another Marlin down the road.
Yeah, if I get that Rossi, that's probably the direction I'm going to go personally.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he offers for the Rossies. I'm not sure if he offers one that mounts to the top of the bolt or the receiver, or if he just makes one that replaces the factory rear sight. But I know he does list Rossi sights on his website. So I'd have to, and I've never really gone to see what exactly he offers for it. I'll have to do that later on after we get off the show.
Yeah, I'll probably do the same thing because that's kind of how I plan my purchases for new guns. You know, I see what's available for them too, you know.
Right. So you're actually, like Rob, you know, he talked about getting that Ranch Hand 45 Colt. And I don't know what the barrel length is on that. I know Rossi offers that. I think they offer that 45 Colt rifle in three different barrel lengths. I think they offer it in a 16, a 20.
Right. Yeah, I think you're correct.
And Marlin offers a 94. They make a 94 Trapper with a 16-inch or an 18-inch, and they make the 20-inch standard carbine, and they make a 24-inch cowboy. I went with the 20-inch barrel because being a brush gun, you still want it to be somewhat short and handy to handle in the brush. But with how tall I am, I just find the balance on a very short-barreled rifle to be awkward. So I went with the 20-inch. Plus, I like the magazine capacity. You know, that Marlin has a 10+1 capacity in 44 Magnum.
It's not bad.
No, that's quite a bit of firepower, really. You know, I wish it would work with the 300-grain bullet. But even with 240-grainers, you know, with a good shot, I would still take a moose with, well, inside of 75 yards with it. You know, if I could get a good shot, you know, that knew I was going to be able to make the shot that needed to be made. It is a bit of a disappointment to me because I do like the heavy bullets, but it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, I think the only thing hanging me up on the Rossi right now is my love affair with a Ruger Bisley in 32 H&R Magnum. But I only have one complaint with it. They only make them in a 6.5-inch barrel.
So I think Ruger makes a 327 Federal with a 5 or 5.5 in a Bisley configuration.
Yeah, but I don't know why. I really want the one that says 32 H&R Mag on the barrel. I know it's really childish. It's like one of my favorite cartridges of all time. Because I actually collect Harrington and Richardson revolvers. I have like 9 of them.
Yeah.
A bunch of the 7.32s, nickel and blue, and I have one in 32 H&R mag and some of the 22s. But I would really like one, even a 5-inch, but like a 4 5/8 Bisley 32 H&R mag blued would be super sweet, and I'd put excess big dot sights on it and just call it done. I'd carry the damn thing.
It's been a little while since I've been over on Bobby Tyler's website, but he had 3 of the original single sixes on his site not that long ago, I think. He had a 4 5/8, a 5.5, and a 6.5-inch single sixes blued in 32 H&R. They were not the Bisley model. They were just a standard model, but he only wanted like $480 or something like that for it. Really wasn't a bad price.
It's not bad.
I had a 4 5/8-inch one for a while, and I ended up swapping it for a, what did I swap that thing for? I swapped it to my neighbor in Montana when we lived over there. I swapped it for a Ruger M77 270 left-handed rifle. And I've kind of regretted it ever since. My dad actually carries, last time I talked to my dad, and I'm sure he still does daily carries a Ruger single six and 32 mag. And he was, you think I'm a tightwad. My dad is the ultimate tightwad. He would not spend the money to go buy a brand new one. He bought a 22 Magnum that looked like it was in the bottom of a boat, all rusted and really in pretty terrible shape. And then had it converted to center fire and rechambered, and then bought a barrel off of eBay for like $35 or something like that and built his own. And it's uglier than sin because my dad cares 100% about functionality of a gun, not how they look. So he never bothered re-bluing it. So it's ugly, but that's what he carries almost every day.
As long as it shoots straight, though, that's all that matters.
Yeah, the one that he put together was way more accurate than the one I had. The one I had was a little bit disappointing in the accuracy department. It actually it went back to Ruger at one point and was retimed. That's one of the guns. That is the only gun I've ever had to send back to Ruger was that one. And it came back and it was better, but it still just didn't shoot as well as I hoped it would. And, you know, in hindsight now, it may have been me too, because I wasn't the best pistol shot back then. And it may have just been, I saw how well my dad shot and this one doesn't shoot quite as good. And it may have been me. But it just wasn't ever 100% satisfied. It seemed like there was other guns I had that shot quite a bit better than that one. But I do have regrets in swapping it off. I kind of wish I would have kept it now.
Yeah, you'll know here within about a week and a half. I'll post on the page what I get, whether it's a Rossi or a Bisley or whatever. Or hell, you know, maybe I'll take the 51 Navy and have it converted to center fire to 32 H&R mag. That would actually be kind of cool. Cut it down to like a 4-inch.
You know, when I had that Ruger, I used to do a lot of small game hunting with that 32 mag, and I really liked it. It was it worked really good on rabbits and that kind of stuff. It was a fantastic small game cartridge.
Yeah, you know, I think if Elmer Keith was alive, you know, long enough. I mean, when did Elmer Keith die?
I think it was in the 70s. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, 32 H&R mag hit the scene in 1984. I think he would have really enjoyed that cartridge because he really liked 32-20 for small game. So that would have been right up his alley. You know, if Elmer Keith was still alive, he'd probably be running a trap line with a 6.5-inch 32 H&R Bisley Ruger.
Yeah, I think the 32 H&R mag is definitely a cool round. But I'm not going to go and say it's any better than the 327. You know, the 327 offers the potential to be a little bit hotter. And then if you get the single six, for whatever reason, they were able to put 7 rounds of 327 in the single six size gun versus 6 rounds of 32 mag, and the 327 is hotter. So you do get an extra round, and you know, extra round in the cylinder.
Maybe
that could be
they
handy.
Did that with the Bisley with the intentions of people hand loading the 32 H&R mag very heavy and hot and using stuff like that Buffalo Bore Plus P 32 H&R mag 100 grain hard cast type loads. Maybe that's why they left the extra stuff in the cylinder, because they figured with a 6.5 inch barrel, people are probably going to hot ride the living hell out of it. Try to
push for a second. You know, when I had mine, I never really went out of my way to hot rod it that much. I did shoot heavy bullets out of it. I shot 130 grain hollow points out of it. And I really shot that bullet really, really, really well. I forget the mold number, but it was a Lyman bullet mold I had at the time. And I had pins for it. It was a two cavity mold. The front one was a hollow point. And the back one was a standard. It dropped right around 130. I think it was 130 grain solid, 124 grains at a hollow point. And that gun really liked that ball, but I never really hot rodded them out of there. Maybe, 750, 800 foot per second.
Yeah, that's still pretty hot though. Could you carry a 6.5 inch barreled Bisley or single six in the waistband? I mean, I wonder if that would be too long enough, or if it'd be too long for you to even sit down.
I carry that 5 inch Model 29 inside the waistband all the time. So I don't think it'd be too much worse than that, because it's having a little bit, it's even though the barrel's a little bit longer, the frame and cylinder are going to be a little bit shorter.
Right, right. So it might actually even out for overall length.
Yeah, I think overall you're probably pretty close to the same. I'm going to go as far as to say that whatever kind of holster you chose would make a huge difference. A good high quality leather holster that's designed to be carried that way versus a cheap piece of plastic that doesn't have any bend and just has a single clip on it is going to work a lot. The leather holster is obviously going to work a lot better than a hard plastic holster that doesn't bend.
You're going to be limited on options. I mean, pretty much my option will be calling Rob, emailing Rob, and getting a sourdough pancake with the inside the waistband loops on it. Probably, and with a reinforced mouth. What would you think of a gun like that for a carry gun?
Oh, I think Rob would approve of that.
Yeah, he kind of laughed at me though when I mentioned, getting in the waistband for a 51 Navy. he cited reliability and a few other things, and I can't say I blame him. I don't know why. I really like those guns. I always have. I've always thought they were just ultra cool, sexy looking, just sweet. Everybody talks 1911 and single action army, but they forget the 51 Navy came long before they did.
I am not, you're one of my best friends. I'm not going to mock you to your face, but I will not lie that I've made fun of you behind your back a few times about the 51 Navy.
Who hasn't?
I get where you come from. You have a weak spot. I mean, there's things that I have in my collection that is like, why would you shoot that? Because I like it.
Yeah.
There's
one guy I still talk to off of, I'm with Roscoe, and you should look him up. He's got a blog called Tinker Talks Guns. His name's Michael Tinker Pierce. We've kind of shot the bruise, about stuff, and he carries like a Model 85 Taurus. He cut the grip down on and loads.
Yeah, I am familiar with that. He did a really nice job cutting that pistol down.
Have you seen the top breaks he does?
I have, and they're gorgeous. Man,
his stuff is just ultra cool. And he's been messing with that one cartridge he came up with. What is it? The 251 TCM. That sucker's hot. It's like a center fire 22.
Yeah, he did. So that's actually that my dad would really like that, because that's the other single six that when he does not carry that single six 32 mag, he carries another single six that he had converted to center fire in 22 CCM, which was essentially back in the day, Cooper tried to make a center fire 22 Magnum. It didn't go very well, and it died a horrible death. But my dad really has a weak spot for that. He has brass pest special made for it and all that kind of stuff because he likes it. We've got a Cooper Model 37 rifle for it that's worth like $2,800, the only expensive rifle he owns. And then he had that single six made up to match it. So he would really like that 251 if that guy is messing with it.
Now,
really...
whatever became of the 22 special? I mean, I think it died a slow, agonizing death, too.
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I'd never... are you talking about the rim fire or the center fire?
Inner fire.
I am honestly, I'm drawing a blank on what you're talking about there, so it must have died more.
Elmer Keith talks about in Six Guns. I'll have to find the segment on tonight. He liked it because...
Oh, the 25 special.
No, it says 22 special. I'll have to double check it.
Yeah, you'll have to bring that one up. That might be something I need to do a little more research on. I'm not gonna lie, that's escaping my knowledge right now.
Man, back then they had so many cartridges that come about that are totally gone, like 25 Savage and 25 yeah. 20 and 38 40 and you know all that.
You know, I've got over here on my shelf, I've got about 150 rounds of original Winchester Silver Tip factory loaded ammo for a 32-40.
That's cool.
Yeah, and I might have to find myself a 32-40 now just to say I've got one, because it is a cool round. But
yeah. But anyway, the more we talk about this, the more I think that I'm going to go talk to my local dealer about that Bisley 32 H&R Magnum. Like
that's definitely
true.
Yeah, it's a cool gun, dude. I would be. Is it a used one or is it new?
I'm going to get a new one. I'm weird. I'm at the age now, I buy my cool used stuff, but when it's a gun I know I want, it's new production, I'll spend the extra. And see, the cool thing I do, I won't buy one if it's sitting on the shelf. My dealer, I will have him order me a brand new one from the factory, and he won't open it until I get there. I know it sounds weird, but I like to put the first fingerprints outside of the factory on it.
Yeah, you may have a hard time finding a brand new 32 H&R. I don't know if they make one anymore, but they do make a 327 Federal. Do they?
Lipsy's is doing them.
Oh, okay.
Lipsy's is doing the 6.5-inch blue 32 H&R Bisleys. MSRP here. I got it saved right here. I'll tell you what the MSRP is right now. yeah, it's through Lipsy's. It's a Lipsy's exclusive. It's a Bisley 32 H&R. Unfluted cylinder with the wood grips, gorgeous gun. MSRP $669. So what, out the door you're looking at like a $580 gun?
Yeah, we're up here, we're usually pretty close to MSRP by the time we pay for shipping and all that kind of stuff. It just costs so much to get guns up here. But yeah, that's a cool gun for sure. That's you're kind of making me want to go eyeball one of those
now. That's making me, like, to be honest, call me stupid. Like, everybody will know this now. The past month, my carry gun has been a Canik TP9 SFX. Arguably, that is the way to go in our society. It's a 21 round gun that I load with Corbon plus P plus ammunition. It, you know, out of that 5-inch long slide, it's probably pushing 1400 feet a second. I'm probably damn near 357 SIG ballistics. It has Warren tactical sights. It has an ultra shootable 3.5-pound match trigger, and it reloads quickly, and it's easy to shoot quickly, accurately, and I can conceal it. But for some reason, I'm ready to throw it out on the table and put a 32 H&R in my holster. Hell, tonight when I go to the grocery store, I actually just took it off. I've strapped on my 51 Navy rig to go get provisions for the week, because I don't know why. Old guns make me feel good. I feel comfortable. It's having an old friend, you know?
It's funny because my wife and I go shooting together sometimes. She'll flat out say, you know, like if I'm shooting an old trapdoor or something, she says she can tell that I'm visibly having more fun shooting something like a trapdoor. Versus, you know, it's a Glock, it's a 9mm.
Right.
You know, that Canik is a cool gun. When I was carrying a plastic gun for a while, when I lived in Idaho, I carried a plastic, and I carried either a Glock Model 34 for a while, which would be about the same as that Canik, or I carried a Glock Model 22 and 40 Smith & Wesson. And I'll tell you what, I feel better with a 1911 on my belt.
Right. And there's something about, I have a fetish for small frame sub 35 caliber Magnum revolvers. You know what I mean? I like a lot of feet per second, ultra accurate, light and easy handling. You know, dare I say, out of a 6.5-inch barrel, that might be my brush gun. For Tennessee, yeah, that's more than enough. You can take whitetail with the proper buffalo bore or any other good ammo.
I shot a whitetail with a 32H, the nicest buck I've ever shot in Texas. I shot with a 32H and R Magnum, a little 5x5 by a whitetail. Right. Target of opportunity. I'm pulling up the driveway. I'm like, oh, hello there. I have a tag. You're right there. Bam. But that's what I had in the truck, and it worked.
You really dropped him hurling? Imagine if Rossi made a 20-inch octagon barrel 32 H&R mag lever action that held like 16 plus one rounds.
Marlin made one for a very short time.
Oh man, I bet that would be a, you know, the thing I always loved about, I have a couple, you know, the small H&R 732s and 733s, and one of my nickel 32 H&R mags that I keep in one of the drawers as a house gun. They don't recoil a lot. If I could compare the recoil to anything, they feel about like a 148 grain 38 special in an all steel J frame. They're not bad at all. And they're smoking. I mean, really fast.
Yeah. The 32 H&R and the 327 Federal, they're both really good guns. You know, if it wasn't, they wouldn't offer little snub nose revolvers in it. And it wouldn't, you know, I think it's a great personal defense round. I would put with the ballistics of it, I would say, yeah, you're pretty close to a 38 special because you get a little more bullet weight with the 38 special, but you get a little bit more velocity with the little 32 Magnums. So it's definitely a good choice. Anyway, Nick, we're sitting at about an hour on this episode. We probably start thinking about wrapping it up.
There's one more thing I'll mention just for some of our viewers that may not be super familiar with 32 H&R mag. A lot of people think 32 H&R would be really weak, but I'm pulling up some statistics right here, and what might shock you is how powerful some of it is. And by the way, I was wrong. It was developed in 1982, not 1984. About the weakest load on the market is a cast lead flat point 77 grain bullet. It's 998 feet a second and 170 foot-pounds of muzzle energy, which still isn't bad. I'd call that like a jackrabbit load or something like that. Now, we step it up to a standard pressure 100-grain jacketed hollow point from Federal, 1,208 feet per second, 300.
Yep. Did we lose you again? Hello. All right, well, I guess that's all we're going to talk about with the 32 Magnum. We're going to go ahead and try to get this episode wrapped up. Hopefully, we can get some of these technical issues and little bugs worked out, and we can produce a better quality show here in the future. But in the meantime, we appreciate everybody listening. We're going to try to get together later on in the week, maybe Wednesday or Thursday before I go back to work, and we'll talk about that. That 1905 M&P I have coming in, and we'll start thinking about the challenge that we're Nick and I will do between his little infield revolver. But I can't think of anything else we need to touch on this episode. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.